Hi, and welcome to the Care Talks Cancer Podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals, and do what Care does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. When Pamela Hegg was diagnosed with stage 4 uterine papillary serous carcinoma, she searched online for answers. Answers that ended up telling her the odds of survival were extremely low. Her primary care physician echoed this, telling her she had roughly 3 months to live. That was in 2017. Now, she keeps busy trying new foods and activities and making the most of her time with friends and family while continuing treatment. In this episode of the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast, Hegg discusses her cancer journey and shares insight on how she stays positive while navigating different treatments and managing side effects and pain.
So let's talk about your cancer journey. And I believe that mentioned that your cancer was originally found in September 2017. So take us back to that time. What symptoms you may have had? How were you diagnosed? Treatment? How you felt?
I was actually visiting my daughter and a friend of hers, and I have never had health problems other than breaking things because of my sports. And on the ride home, I started having pain across my belly, which I never had. By the time I got home, I felt like one of my big brothers had been beating me up. And so I waited a little bit. It didn't go away. I finally called in the doctor's office, and they said, well, you know, it could be a kidney stone. You have one that's been there for a while. It hasn't bothered you at all. So I was kind of waiting it out, and I got so sick after about 2 or 3 days at home that I went over to the emergency immediate care. Lo and behold, the guy came back. He said, well, we're going to do a CT. And he did the CT, and he came back. He looked at me, and he said, I need to go immediately down to Evanston Hospital emergency. This looks like cancer. I'm from a very large family. I have no history of cancer. My parents and siblings all lived to their 90s. I'm much younger than them. So no respect. I went in for pain management then for 6 days, and they tested and looked at everything. And finally, they just said, well, we're going to send you home and here's somebody to contact. And it happened to be an endometrial oncologist surgeon who was a wonderful man. I loved him. He said, I don't think you're going to need me, but here's my card. And then they did one last test at the hospital before I went home. And I was packing to go up when the nurse called me and said, he would like to see you tomorrow morning to discuss the results of the last test they just did. So I went in to meet him. Really wonderful man. I really enjoyed him. He said to me, well, Pam, nothing is confirmed, but when it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it probably is a duck. So something in me just says this may well be cancer. So he did a couple of weeks of tests and then said to me, nothing is coming through. He said, we're going to have to try an exploratory surgery. He explained the process to me, which I knew nothing of, and said, I just want you to sign anything in case we find anything. That way we can take care of it immediately. So I went in to do that September 20th-ish. And lo and behold, when I woke up, I had stage 4B, rare UPSC cancer. And he said, do not look this up online. He said, all the data is old. And I did. I looked it up. I had like a 2.5% chance of survival. My regular family doctor told me, call your son home from the Middle East. He's in the service for a year. You probably have about 3 months. I just kind of sat there with my mouth hanging open going, I don't know cancer. I don't understand this. I don't feel that bad, other than the surgery was horrible, but it was a big surprise. And so I just went into learn mode, recover from the surgery, and then I was to start chemo in November. While I was waiting, I was watching and talking to a couple of friends who I knew who had cancer, and I saw online a race to end women's cancer. I didn't even know what endometrial meant at that point. And I sat there and I thought, you know what? If I live, I'm going to be in that race next year. So I started chemo routines, and it did not go well with my system. I ended up in the ER many times. I did a typical routine of the Taxol and carboplatin. Lost all my hair after a long battle of trying to keep it. I had very heavy hair. But again, I have to get my energy out. And so I had a vacuum, and I would just vacuum my head and see how much hair was coming off of every day. And it was okay. The stuff worked. I was NED, actually, within about 3 months. And it looked like everything was kind of going to be okay because I did not understand the difference between recurrent cancers and one-time shot stage 4B. So next year, I made it a year. I went in for my regular couple of months checkup, and I looked at my surgeon and he was all done. I felt fine. And he looked at me, he had tears in his eyes, and he said, it's back. It was just before the race, which I had already signed up to watch the Washington, D.C. for. And I said, well, I've got something to do first. So I didn't go out to D.C. I walked locally because I wasn't doing well. But then he changed my routine, and I did a whole other set of it. And they offered me one of my first opportunities to become kind of a pioneer. They had in the North Shore Hospital system, and they had started a gel cap to save your hair. I really didn't care about saving my hair. I didn't like the pain. It was like having pins in your head when it came out. And my hair had just grown back. It was like maybe an inch and a half long. So they wanted somebody to try this, and nobody had yet. I signed up to be their first patient. And I just had the most fun ever with the nurses. Things stopped in the middle of it. The machine went red. The fire alarm went off. But we had a wonderful time. And the man who started it from England actually came over to meet us. There are several people who were looking at doing this. And I suggested they have a volunteer program begin. And he looked at me and he said, how about you start it? So I did. And I went, finally, I'm helping. And they told me I probably lose 50% of my hair. I didn't lose any. So I felt very lucky. But my original doctor was leaving. And as a cancer patient, you panic then. Oh, no. Who's going to take care of me? And he said, I have a younger person here that I want to recommend to you. Because she's big into clinical trials and looking for all kinds of things. I think you will need that. So I met her. She didn't seem like my style at all. She was very negative, but she was very honest. She kept telling me, it's going to come back, it's going to come back. I said, okay, but can we treat it? And turned out we have a wonderful relationship because the big thing she did for me is she let me become part of my own care team. And that is a big plus because you are so out of control when all this is going on. And it's like, okay, I can do something. I can have something to say. So, but unfortunately, that routine did not last long, despite the change of doses that made it easier for me to get through it. So I ended probably the end of March or the first week of April. By August, my cancer was back. And she looked at me and she said, Pam, it's always going to come back. In fact, it's going to come back in shorter and shorter amounts of time because that's what you have. So that kind of brought me to my second area. I thought, you know what, why didn't you tell me that before? Because I wasn't prepared for it. I was still hoping for, well, I still have a chance. Maybe I'll have a lot of time. But she also said, you can't go on the carboplatin again. We're going to keep you on Taxol and try you on a kind of a new trial drug, Avastin. So I still needed the Paxman, which I used again, and it worked perfectly again. And I went through that, but it didn't last long. By January of 2020, my cancer was back again. And we looked at each other in a panic. I had looked before to try to get into some clinicals, but they wouldn't let me because of all the heart problems from Keytruda Lenvima. But this time it had now just gone off and was on FDA approval. And so she could control how much I took. And I became one of their patients on Keytruda Lenvima. And it lasted until just last month. But that takes me to immunotherapy. And immunotherapy is a whole new world. I recommend it to anybody who has a recurrence. Unlike chemo, it doesn't attack your whole body. I was so sick from the chemos. And then you'd be okay for a little bit, and then you take the next one, and you're sick again. Immunotherapy was difficult to adjust to. But once I got adjusted, it was just kind of like, wow, these are side effects that I can manage. Granted, the side effects are different for different people, but I'm an academic, so I have a lot of journals. I write down everything I take, when I take it, how I felt, so I could look back and see patterns. Blood pressure was a big issue up and down, and what they finally gave me was the ability to choose my own amount of medicine to keep it from getting out of hand. The Lenvima caused lots of mouth sores, which I lived with for a year, but now in being off of it for just maybe a week or two, they're gone. I had thyroid issues that I never had, taking thyroid medicine. I had aches in my hands so bad that I couldn't play the piano. And that I cried about. And that alternative medicine was wonderful because I felt I was taking things that weren't as harmful to my body. And then the pancreatic enzyme also dries you out completely. That's how I lost my voice so many times. Every time I would go off of it and start up again, I would have that problem. Once you get into it, you find your own level of management. It seems like about 4 months in.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you're a very optimistic, positive person. How did you maintain your positivity throughout this entire journey?
You know what? I am like that in general, but I have never been hit this hard. I would not say I was. I was really sick many, many times. But I discovered in my journal, by keeping it down, that I was better in a couple days. And so I kind of went, okay, maybe it's not that bad. And I'm a person of faith. I believe in God, and I kind of felt like you keep putting the new meds right up in front of me. This just opened up to FDA approval. You can take it. And a lot of those things, plus my church, my friends, my family grew closer. My son came home, and his wife told me, oh, he cried and cried when he was sick, Pam. You don't know. They didn't know what they were going to do with him. And you know what? He came up here and spent time with me. His wife came up and spent weeks with me. I had friends that had helped me give myself shots, which I couldn't reach to give myself. Those faith and family and friends, they're just there. And then I realized that, am I depressed? What's going on? Why did I go up and down? And I've got therapy involved in one of the local cancer groups that's a big support. And started realizing that so much in life, we worry about tomorrow. But I can't live in tomorrow. Even you can't live in tomorrow. So I look at today and I go, you know what? I feel good. Yeah, they're saying I don't have much time. But I feel good now, today. So I play. I enjoy it. I love it. I have my youngest daughter has 4 boys, the youngest of whom is 2. And I go up and I get my hugs and I love on them and I just do things that I never did. And when COVID hit, the person who had been my caretaker by now had become my best friend. And I said, we are not going to sit still because this was 2020 and I was finally feeling better because of the immunotherapy. We did all the dumb things in the world. We found things that were open and we went play miniature golf. We would be the only people on the course. And they would laugh at us, but we would do miniature golf. We would go buy food at the local restaurants and go park in a forest preserve and take pictures of ourselves eating food in a car just because we got out of the house. You can sit at home and feel miserable. You're just stuck.
Let's talk about where you are now with your cancer journey.
I go through about 6 months, and lately now 12 months. And because my cancer is what it is, it appears someplace else. I'm not a medicine person, but I have studied and read all I can. And like anything else in you, it's trying to survive. And so it modifies itself and it appears someplace else. First, it appeared recently, since January, February, trying to cut off a kidney ureter. And so I went to radiation, just ended a month ago, and they put in a stent, which I didn't think I could live with, but I'm doing fine with it. And now when we got to the end of trying to check that out, my liver had gone, the numbers all of a sudden went bad, and they thought it was Keytruda because it commonly attacks the liver. So I went in for a bunch of tests. They thought it was getting better, but then it did not. And so they just recently, a few weeks ago, they've run a follow-up CT, and it has gotten worse. And I'm going to get results tonight, actually, on that. But whenever this happens, it seems to take a while for the doctor to identify what is wrong. I think what she has said to me is the fact that it's a learning process for them, too, because these are new medicines, new problems. People don't normally survive this long. The friends that I had met that have cancer, anywhere near as long as I have, mostly have not made it. But I have one, and we talk a lot about it. So I think she emphasizes with me, side effect management is a big issue with any immunotherapy. But then when something hits, they kind of immediately get on it. They have a team of surgeons, their tumor team or whatever they call it. It comes up with people in every possible specialty. So I can only take care of myself today. And I know that she looks at it, she goes, your quality of life is very high. So you need to make sure you're finding ways, you know, to keep that, keep joy, keep looking for hope. Things like activities that I do, and I've gotten out and biked my first 20 miles and started exercising. And I get to play the piano, which is always calming for me when I'm in this transition time. It's hard for everybody. Right. And the best part for me is I have people who come up to me, even without cancer, who go, "You're so happy." And I say, "I'm not always happy, but I'm happy right now to be right here with you." And they find that something that helps them in whatever might be their problem. And once again, I get to go, I can share something.
So if there was one thing you wish you knew when you were first diagnosed that you know now, what would that be?
I wish I had known that I always could have had hope, that there is no one final diagnosis. They don't know when it's over. I didn't have any idea because there wasn't even stuff written down. It was just like, you're not going to make it. You have cancer. You're not going to make it. But even I think the doctors have that, and they can't tell me what it is because I don't think they know. I mean, the product, the cutaneous lymphoma, wasn't even available when I came down with everything. So that it, had I known that these options are kind of always out there. I know that most people don't want the data, but for me, once I got to accept my disease, I kind of went, so what can I do? And the doctor has gotten better at it. I'm part of the team, but it's like, okay, you can always have some hope. Even when you feel terrible, you might be okay. And you still, however you are that one day, it's an evolving disease, it's an evolving cure, and together is the best way to handle it. So I would want a doctor who is just like that in terms of letting you be part of your own solution and decisions. You've got to listen, but then you should have a say. You know, life actually has more value to me now that I've been through cancer and I'm living with it than it did before. If I said anything to anybody, you know, I will never skip a hug. I'll take it with gloves and coats on just to get it. And the little two-year-old climbs up my body, clings out of my arms, and just puts its head down like a little monkey, and I just kind of go, what a wonderful feeling this is. Life is good, even with stage 4B cancer.
Pam, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me this afternoon, and I admire your optimism and your positivity, and so I thank you for bringing that up to me, sharing your journey, everything.
I'm happy to hear that. I know my daughter, who was crying when I was so sick, had just a couple weeks ago said that to me. She said, "Mom, your attitude, this makes me feel better about life."
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.